Hello, this is Julianne Good, and this is the second episode of Psych 101. We're here today for to make psychology a little more understandable, entertaining, and hopefully enlightening, and make it entertaining, and hopefully you get a little bit out of, you know, understanding psychology and life from a different angle. Just a little bit about myself. I'm currently finishing up my master's of MFT at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in downtown Los Angeles. And I am currently a practicing counselor and doing my practicum hours and specializing in working with children, parents, domestic violence, and rape issues. Today, my special guest is Dr. Melody Bacon, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about her background. Dr. Bacon is a clinical psychologist in private practice with her husband, Ron, who is a marriage and family therapist in San Juan Capistrano, California. In addition to working with couples and individuals facing relationship challenges, they have conducted workshops for pre-engaged couples. One of them is called Before You Pop the Question, and they have another workshop for married couples called Happily Married After. Dr. Bacon is also a teacher and administrator for the Chicago School of Professional Psychology in Southern California in Los Angeles, where she chairs the Marital and Family Therapy Program. Welcome, Dr. Bacon.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off with a passage from your new book, which is called The Grace-Filled Divorce, Allowing God to Redeem Your Pain for the Greater Good. The experience of divorce is the chaos of a dying world. Your old life is over. Your new life has not yet begun. And what follows is a time of disequilibrium, confusion, and uncertainty. Whether or not you wanted your divorce, the early days are the most challenging. Grief over the loss of something you once valued above all else thrusts you into a tumult of emotions that make it difficult to maintain your bearings. In addition, you feel as though you are in limbo, no longer married, and not yet settled into life after your divorce. And I want to ask you about this, Dr. Bacon. I mean, this is an interesting title to this, The Grace-Filled Divorce. That's a challenge, I would imagine, for most people who are divorced, especially at the beginning stages of it. And I'd like to ask you, is it possible for a person's view of their ex-spouse to change for the better?
Oh, absolutely. I know that it seems difficult, particularly at the beginning of a divorce, to think of your ex in anything but probably the most unfavorable light. But I've worked with a lot of individuals, and I did quite a bit of research, actually, for the book prior to writing it, to just see, you know, what the process of divorce was like for people. And I really wanted to look at people who went through the experience and came out better than they were before in some way, having a life that was more engaging and fulfilling, not because they got rid of their ex, which often people think is the reason why their life is better, but because they learned something fundamentally about themselves. And that's what stimulated the desire to write the book, in the first place, was to help other people learn that they can have a better life if they are willing to go through the process of grieving the loss of their marriage and all the things that go with that.
Right. I would imagine that's really important, because most people just hold on to old memories of what it was like when they were married, whether it was good or bad, and the bitterness of the end of it. And, especially if one person was more in favor of the divorce than the other. And I know your book talks about that, about initiators and non-initiators. Right. And I thought that was really interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, it is an interesting phenomenon, because unlike other kinds of grief, like after somebody passes away, you know, obviously there's only one person left. In a divorce, you often have a person who initiated the divorce, who decided at some point in time they were done with the marriage before their partner was, or even if their partner wasn't aware of how dissatisfied they were. And so I think what makes divorce so confusing for people who are either going through it or have family and friends who are, is that they may be looking at someone who didn't want the divorce, and that would be the non-initiator, and their grief is going to be very different than the person who finally came to the conclusion that they needed to get a divorce. And their grief actually occurs during the marriage. So they are typically very unhappy throughout their marriage. They've typically tried to do a lot of things to try to save it, and eventually come to the point at which they've tried everything, nothing's changing, and they've made the decision to have a dissolution of the marriage. And so that person often doesn't look like they're grieving all that much. Now, I've seen in my office as a psychotherapist, even people who initiate at least grieve the loss of all the hopes and dreams that they had, the life that they thought they would have at this point. They have children frequently. They didn't want them to grow up in a divorced home. So there's still bereavement of sorts, but for the initiator, generally that has occurred within the context of the marriage. So you've got two different experiences of grief and divorce depending on the time frame. That being said, I would also say that sometimes it's not easy to see who really is the initiator.
Right, because it can be such a complex play back and forth of, you know, who's really to blame, mm-hmm. who's at fault. And I mean, once it comes down to it, I think both people are at fault, period. It can Absolutely. Be a little bit, it depends on the issue within the relationship. But, you know, I think, you know,
absolutely,
nobody's perfect, right?
Well, everyone contributes to the marriage they had. And what that contribution was, I think, is an important part of this whole process of learning from the experience of divorce. You know, what was my contribution to the marriage? It could be that you were unwilling to see what was in front of your eyes. Many times people's friends and families were advising the person not to marry the person they decided to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, friends and family are quite a good predictor of marital success or non-success.
Right, the support system. And then, and like you stated, I mean, basically, love can be blind.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, I think as a society, we still have a tendency to romanticize relationships of an intimate source, like they're supposed to be our end-all and be-all, and that's not life. It can be rather complicated.
Yeah, and I think, too, that people don't understand the complexities of what creates even an attraction to someone. I look a lot at the families people come from and the challenges those families have had to stay connected to people in a meaningful way, and you know what that might have contributed to the difficulty somebody had in their marriage, mm-hmm. because they just came from a situation where no one in their family has really been able to figure this out, and they were equally stumped. But also, there are contributing factors that, if they weren't there, the person would have decided to stay married. So I would call that person a reluctant initiator. This is often someone who, if their spouse is an addict or an alcoholic and would get into treatment, you know, they would stay. But very often that person has decided to pick their drug of choice over their spouse. And so that spouse decides, you know, I'm just not willing to stay married to someone who's picking alcohol or drugs over me.
Right, because then it ends up being another relationship mm-hmm. versus what it should be with either your husband or your wife.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that has to be difficult. And that kind of falls in line, too, if you would change, then I would stay.
Right.
And a lot of people aren't willing to change. I mean, change has to come from within the person that's needing to mm-hmm. be changed. And that's...
You never know what it's going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. So sometimes the way I view marriage is that it's what David Snarch, who wrote a great book called A Passionate Marriage, he calls marriage a people-growing machine. And I think we don't understand, you said earlier about this romantic ideal we have about marriage. we don't understand that it's supposed to force us to continue to grow ourselves. And obviously not the whole time. Nobody wants to be married, you know, where they're having to work all the time on the relationship. But there's going to be times where you're just going to get stumped. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, as long as you recognize that something in you needs to change, some perspective. And what that is not always easy to see. So, of course, being in the field of relational coaching, I'm always one to say, well, if you're stumped, go get some assistance. Because, you know, there's a lot of other things that we're not all that, you know, reluctant to go and seek help with. Why not make relational counseling one of those things? But, you know, that being said, sometimes what I'm trying to do when I'm working clinically is prevent the next divorce. If I'm working with a couple and let's say that person finally decides, one of the two decides to really be present in that relationship and stand up for themselves. And their partner decides, well, I don't like this. This is not the kind of marriage I want. I want the way we used to be. And, you know, that person says, well, I'm not going to be that way anymore. This is me. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that could be a situation where that marriage will not sustain because the partner isn't willing to create a new marriage with that, you know, with their spouse. But that being said, then the next time around, because people do remarry, it's upwards 85 to 90% of people remarry from a divorce, mm-hmm. even though everybody says they're never going to. So what I say is, look, if we don't prevent this one, let's prevent the next one, because the divorce rate for second marriages is up to 70 to 75%.
Yes, I've read that in your book, and that's pretty shocking because I think some people think, well, you know, this first marriage isn't working. I'm going to walk out of it. I'm going to find something better. You know, the grass is mm-hmm. greener on the other side. And then I saw your statistic in your book, 75% yeah. of divorces for second marriages. That's kind of shocking. That puts a, you know, I think that puts a real perspective on before you go. Well, hopefully you're going to be able to work out your first marriage and prevent that mm-hmm. that first divorce. But if you do get divorced,
right.
do some work on yourself before
Absolutely.
You go and get into another serious relationship right. in the next marriage. Because with statistics like that, it's
difficult.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. Now, I wanted to ask you, now, what is your background on this, for writing this book, and what led you to write a book that has a Christian perspective mm. on divorce. Mm-hmm. I would think that this is a different twist to the different books that are on divorce out there, because the other ones seem to be pretty generalized. Yeah. And so can you tell us a little bit
sure,
about that?
Sure, absolutely. Well, it was an interesting process. I began my research during my doctoral program on grief. I had been widowed and had been interested in the grief experience in general. And as I did more and more research, I found that there was really a lack of research on grief and divorce. It was as though there isn't any grief in divorce, which I had by then had some friends who had gotten divorced, and I certainly saw the fact that they were bereaved in their own way and were really lacking the support that a widow might get, at least for some time after you know, their loss. So I wanted to find out, well, what exactly has been done on the grief of divorce? What have people written about? And from there, you know, I decided to write the dissertation on that. So I interviewed several women, and I picked women out of expediency because literature that I had looked at had shown that it's very difficult to find men who will stay single for any length of time after a marital breakup. So I decided to find people that might still be single so I could interview them. So that's another area that needs to be studied is, mm-hmm. is men and grief in divorce. And so it turned out that the women who I interviewed had all come from a Christian background, even though, and that was significant to them as a person, I would say that what was the most beneficial to them across the board was going into their own therapy, which was an outcome I hadn't looked for, but it was there in the research. And so I initially did set out to write a book that was a little bit more generic, but it just wasn't, there wasn't any liveliness to the writing for me. And so I tend to work from a perspective that integrates spirituality with psychology. And so I decided to bring that into the book because that's how I work clinically. And it doesn't really matter if the person is Christian or of some other faith, because all the religious traditions have some kind of spiritual component to them that you can connect with. And even those who don't overtly have any religious faith often will connect with, I live near the ocean in Southern California, so a lot of my clients surf. And going out surfing is their connection with a transcendent experience, something bigger than themselves. And so I decided to bring that into the book because it was so helpful to my clients in navigating, talk about an oceanic experience. That would be, you know, divorce is like a big stormy sea, and you're this little tiny person on a sailboat trying to navigate, you know, stormy waters. To have some experiences that kind of calm things down a bit, I think it has been really useful.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be beneficial for keeping a couple out of court, especially if there are children involved. Yes. And there's just intense emotions.
Yep.
And, you know, just being able to refocus and recenter and look at it from a growth perspective.
Absolutely.
Would be really beneficial. So how do you encourage others to view divorce as a starting point for spiritual formation?
Well, the ideas behind spiritual formation, which are, again, you can find what they call the mystical traditions, which you can find in every, you know, major religious system. And that is the idea that you really want to encounter God in a personal way. So however that works within that tradition, but they happen to have several practices in common. And so bringing in ideas from these mystical traditions, practices that can assist people in lowering from a what I would say their emotional reactivity, their tendency to kind of get very emotional very quickly, and then later on wonder what they did because they've just blown something up, for example. Not literally, but, you know, in a sense that their emotions got away from them and they regretted what they just did. Mm-hmm. We're trying to prevent that. And so what I found is actually what I explained to my clients is a useful kind of metaphor for the brain, which is that it's like an ice cream sundae with a cherry on top. And the main portion of the sundae, the ice cream, is what we call your limbic system, which has to do with survival. And it's fight, flight, or freeze. So that's the part of the brain that gets interacted with in a divorce very easily. And it will cause you to do things that later on, you know, could be harmful to you and other people.
Right.
The cherry is what we call our neocortex, which is the thinking part of our brain. So you can see why when we're emotional, it's so hard to keep a handle on our emotions and think clearly because the thinking part is so small.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important in a divorce, which is very difficult emotionally, to try to let that little cherry thinking part of your brain be in control and make the decisions for you. And one of the things these spiritual practices do is bring that into bearing in terms of better able to think clearly about decisions in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the unfortunate thing with divorce. You're often asked to make very big decisions at probably a time when you're the least capable of doing it.
Right.
You know, you're being buffeted about, you're being asked to think about child custody and and you're being asked to, you know, think about how you want to live, and if you've been a stay-at-home mom, you know, how you're going to get a job, and all these big lifestyle changes happen all of a sudden, and, you know, it can be overwhelming. So I'm one for assisting clients in slowing down this roller coaster that they're on and thinking about, okay, let's just take some time. A client of mine recently wanted to file a divorce for a divorce, and at the same time, she wasn't quite sure. She was trying to do everything all at once, and I said, well, you know, you've got 6 months at the very least, at least in the state of California, from the time you file to the time it's finalized. So, you know, time is on your side, and in fact, you don't need to file right now because her husband's not interested in getting a divorce anyway. So at this point in time, why don't we take a couple weeks and think this through, not to save the marriage per se, but to assist her in getting a little bit more clear exactly how to navigate this. And so I think that's a lot of the effort that I do clinically, and that's a lot of the reason behind writing the book, was to assist others in doing the same thing.
Right. And would you recommend this book at the beginning stages of a divorce then, or separation, or where would this, you know, the grace-filled divorce book come in the most handy?
You know, I think it can come in at any time. I know that sounds a little self-serving, but I have a friend actually who finished reading the book, and he had been separated several years ago, and then they did reconcile. And there were a couple of chapters he referred to. He said, you know, these are just good suggestions for any kind of relationship, whether mm-hmm. or not, you know, you're married, or you're, they're your kids or your parents or your boss. So there's some things in the book that are good to know just in terms of navigating any kind of relationship intensity. Mm-hmm. And then there's others that can help you as you're going through the divorce. What stage, for example, that you might be in, and what to expect, so that you're not so caught off guard. And a lot of people wonder, is this ever going to end? Am I always going to feel like this? It can kind of give you hope that I can get through this and be okay. And then there's, even after you've been divorced, a lot of people are still confused as to what exactly happened and what was going on for me. I think having some sense of that, you know, some framework can be, you know, helpful to you even after you've been divorced. And then I also think it can be helpful to family members and friends, mm-hmm. because they're often sitting on the, not exactly the sidelines, because they're being affected by this.
Right.
But at the same time, it isn't their relationship that's breaking up, and they want to know how to navigate that process, often feeling torn maybe between two individuals. So I think it can be useful to a lot of different people for different reasons, and at different stages of the process.
Right. And it's, you know, it's very easy to read. It's very navigatable. It's, you know, it's broken down very poetically, and I want to commend you on your writing. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
And I also want to reach out to the listeners. If you would like to call in and ask any questions of Dr. Bacon, the number is 1-800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. We'd love to hear from you. So if you want to call in and be part of the show, we'd love to have you. So I also want to ask you, Dr. Bacon, what are the most frequent misunderstandings about the causes of divorce?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one, actually, I do workshops periodically on this topic, and I always start out with that question of the audience. And there's a lot of very common, I think, misconceptions. One that I hear a lot is it's too easy to get divorced, as though if we made it harder, you know, people would kind of have to stick together. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing my research, it was very interesting to look at divorce from a historical perspective. And because it's misleading to look at divorce statistics when, yes, in years past, it was very difficult to get a divorce legally. So what people would do is just have a de facto divorce. They would just leave each other and never legally divorce. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to really compare, you know, whether it's easier now or not, if the divorce rate is really, truly higher. I don't think, though, from my experience and the experience in the research shows that people don't take divorce lightly. They don't look at it as, an option that anybody wants. They don't go into marriage thinking, oh, I can just divorce if it doesn't work out. All of those things that get thrown around really are not the case. Everybody that I work with, and I don't think I'm unique in that, really regrets the decision, even if they believe that it's the only one that's available to them, and it may be mm-hmm. at that moment. I think another misconception, we kind of touched on that earlier, is that people think they've married the wrong person. And that would be, I often say, well, if that were the case, then second marriages should all work out because we're not going around picking another wrong person, you know?
Right.
So I don't think it's necessarily about the wrong person. I think people marry people that will force them to grow. I think the question is that other person going to grow along with you? That's the great unknown, and there's nothing we can do about that.
Right. People are going to change at their own speed,
right,
if at all. But, you know, most of the time people do change and they don't realize how much they do. They just keep on going and doing their daily routines and not even realizing, you know, how am I different today than I was a year mm-hmm. ago? Or how am I different in this relationship versus just, you know, going along the status quo and just saying, okay, it's another day with the same person.
Right.
And it's, you know, and it, I don't think that the media helps it at all either mm-hmm. when they sit there and, you know, make nasty comments about people who have been married for a long time versus looking at the beauty of people who have really made their relationships work for years and years.
Right.
I mean, I think that's almost, you know, hi, caller?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. I just have one question. I was wondering, when your guest, I'm sorry, I forgot her name.
Dr. Bacon?
Yes, I'm sorry. Dr. Bacon has her sessions with divorcees or people planning to divorce. Does she also incorporate their children into some type of seminar, or does she have a partner that basically deals with the kids and the trauma and problems that they're going through?
Yeah, that's a great question. Generally, I would say that I tend to work with the mom and or the dad, if they're divorcing, to help their children. So that's my first attempt. If they still think that the children would be helped by coming in, we can do a family session together. So sometimes that will happen. And I'm lucky enough that my partner in my practice is also my husband, and he's a marriage and family therapist, and his specialty is working with children. So I do refer if the kids, you know, really are struggling, and really sometimes kids really want their own person to work with. And so, you know, I do try to honor that because I think, you know, kids often, one of the sad things about divorce is they often get kind of sidelined, and their parents' drama kind of becomes center stage, and that's really one of the saddest things about divorce. So anything that a loving parent can do to let their child be heard by someone and listened to, I think can be really constructive. So I do sometimes see the family together, but I also refer to someone if the child wants their own therapist, that they have somebody that they can work things through.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you. That's a good question. You know, the children. Mm-hmm. You know, because statistically now children that are coming from divorced families, now when they grow up and start having intimate relationships of their own and committed relationships and hopefully marriages.
Yeah.
Do you know what the statistics are for those children going on and being able to have a healthy relationship out of that? Is it compromised because their parents were divorced?
Well, you know, that's a complicated question, but a good one. I think it's a combination of things. One is that right now, I have a son who's in his mid-20s. His generation is not marrying to the extent that the prior generations did at that age, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I think if people wait a little longer, they have a little bit clearer idea of who they are before they get married. So that can be useful. There have been some studies that have interviewed children of divorce when they get to be of marriageable age. And they have found that they are much more fearful of the negative consequences having gone through that themselves. But I would also say, coming from a family systems perspective, so I look at the individual, but I also look at their whole family. I look at all the ways people have related to each other over several generations. And so that, you can't really separate that out. It may not just be their parents' divorce. It may be that people in their family tend to divorce grandma and grandpa and aunts and uncles. So this is a family system that tends to, when things get really intense, leave. And my husband has a phrase that in that case, you kind of need to get lead boots on your feet, so to speak. In other words, you may need to stay a little longer only to see if you really need to leave or if that's the default of your family coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So, however, one would think that if your parents have not been able to navigate, for whatever reason, the different phases of marriage, because, you know, you touched on the idea of long-term marriages. I think every marriage, well, let's put it this way, that two people who are partners for a long time have gone through several marriages together.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've just been able to navigate the different marriages that they need to have with each other, you know, for whatever reason. And then those that haven't been able to navigate that, you know, at least to be able to look at, well, what are the skills that I need to learn in order to do that? Because we do change. We do, as David Snarch, again, in Passionate Marriage explains, we do come to the end of our pretense with each other. Whatever we did to try to avoid fighting or avoid issues, you know, after 10 years, on average, we get tired of it. And then we actually become more honest and real with each other.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you have the opportunity now to bury the old marriage and create a new one with the same person. If that works out, that's great. So, but getting back to the children, I think it does affect them. But I would say that I do know that a divorce that is very contentious, where people are fighting for a long time in court and children are being dragged through all kinds of investigations, and or worse than that even, are the parents that are using them to try to get information about their partner or their ex-spouse, all of those, you know, compound the issue. So there's the divorce itself and then everything that happens afterward. And that can be mitigated. You may not be able to prevent the divorce, but you can certainly prevent the damage done to the children afterward.
Exactly, especially the game playing that mm-hmm. so many couples do with their children in the middle of divorce.
Awful.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, I would say that would probably be one of the most damaging aspects of the divorce.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
And even, you know, even children in my practice from divorced families sit there and they make smart comments. They understand mm-hmm. what's going on. They'll come in and they'll tell me what mom and dad
yes.
told them to do here and there, and, you know, how they're coached here and there. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean,
it's sad.
It is. And the long-term consequences of that would, who knows what's going to happen up the road. I mean, mm-hmm. they may turn around and do the same mm-hmm. thing to their partners
right.
or their children. And the cycle continues.
Yeah. It gets kind of programmed in there as an option.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that can be just so complicated. Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the book here. Now, you say that there are 7 guidelines for change that you offer in the grace-filled divorce. Can you go through those with us?
Well, I'd have to review what I wrote in terms of the actual number. But I would say I give some broader kinds of guidelines. And one is, I think you need to start with the fact that if you have to go through pain and suffering, which you will when you divorce, try to learn something from it. Because I think what's worse than having suffering is having suffering that has no meaning or purpose. So to say, I don't ever want to do this again. I want to learn from this. What can I learn about me? What can I change about me so that I can become a person that has better capabilities in all my relationships? So often, you know, even if your ex is your ex, there's still an opportunity to learn from them. And then I would say, I think to connect with your family system, to find people, and it could be you have to go pretty far and wide within your family system to find somebody who's supportive and a good resource for you. But there's someone out there. You know, most of us only know a few members of our family, and those, you know, sometimes we got born into the wrong branch, I like to say. So, but there's a branch out there that may be healthier and working better. Find them. You're part of their family. You may fit in better with them, and connect to your family. I just had a client who actually reconnected with her father. They'd been estranged for a while, and found out all kinds of things about her parents' divorce that her mother had told her were not exactly correct. And it was really eye-opening for my client, who had spent a lot of years, you know, siding with her mother. So I think to use this as an opportunity, you know, to learn and to grow, I think to find support networks where you can. I would definitely say, though, avoid bad-mouthing your ex to your mother, your sister, your kids.
Especially the kids.
Yes, because this person is the parent of your children. They aren't going anywhere, hopefully. You may wish they would, but, you know, for your children's sake, they hopefully will stay around. So you're going to have to learn how to co-parent with someone that you haven't been able to really figure out how to do a marriage with. However, you know, it can be done. You don't have to live with them. You just need to co-parent with them as best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means that you don't need to convince your children and your family and your friends about this horrible person that your spouse is. You just need to be the best person that you can be. And other people can figure out for themselves, you know, whatever needs to be figured out. So I would say, those are probably the basic principles. A corollary to some of that is, and this is what I highly recommend to my clients, is that they really consider using a highly qualified mediator rather than running to a divorce attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that may not make me friends with some attorneys, and I know that there are attorneys who do more of a mediator-style divorce, but most of what people want, which are custody and spousal support and child support issues, those have predetermined formulas, and the law has already figured out all of this. So you don't need to go to court to get a divorce. You don't need to sue for, you know, 100% custody, which is rarely given. And what happens when you get an attorney, not only do you have to put a pretty sizable retainer down. You will now have be asked to start taking notes on your spouse. In other words, you're now in a criminal court mentality, even though this is a family situation. And that just sets the tone for a very negative experience that can last you, you know, several years. And you're really, when you're divorcing, you're trying to get some freedom here.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're creating when you go through these kinds of contentious divorces is the exact opposite. You're even more enslaved, so to speak, to your ex. And then the court then becomes the arbiter of when you can see your children. You know, I told a client, it's almost like you're on probation. You know, you're getting out of prison and now you have a probation officer you have to report to.
Exactly. Well, and it's a whole aspect too of the court system just throws that extra trauma in
right there.
And then, it, like you said, the cost of the lawyers and everything else of the legal fees, it can be just a nightmare and a mess and pull people down financially, which,
absolutely.
You know, how many people can afford to do that nowadays?
They can't. So the average, in the state of California, the average divorce costs $40,000.
Ugh.
You know, which it doesn't need to. You know, I've had people go through mediation and the whole fee for the whole thing was $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will say, well, my spouse is uncooperative or they're crazy. Or, you know, if you have a good mediator, they've worked with every kind of person. You know, they are good at getting people to see it's in their best interest. And what I always advise my clients is that your ex, they may not want to necessarily win the divorce. They just don't want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, to be smart, don't make them feel like a loser. You know, you will win the kind of situation you want in the long run, which is a peaceful life, you know, with a good, you know, basis if you have children for their lives. You certainly want to move on with yours. So do yourself a favor and don't make it your life's mission now to get back at your ex. And don't participate if your ex has that as their life's mission.
Right. Don't feed into the negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, exactly. It's, you know, the end goal is to have freedom and a happy life.
That's right.
For all parties involved once the divorce is over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, and getting back to the grief situation too on with your book, can you discuss that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that I will have clients who are losing a marriage of, let's say, 20 years, crying in my office and saying to me, why am I crying? I don't understand. Well, you just lost your marriage of 20 years. You know, if they had been widowed, they wouldn't have been asking me that question.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have a tendency, because there is a volitional or choice aspect to divorce, that there isn't sadness involved. And yet there is a lot of sadness. And I think what happens with that sadness is it goes down underground and comes out as anger. And that's where we get kind of the really nasty divorce scenarios. There's a lot of unresolved grief and sadness underneath all that anger.
Mm-hmm.
I think compounding that are feelings of shame and guilt, which really, that's one reason why divorce is so difficult emotionally, because not only are you sad because this wasn't what you set out to do when you got married, but now you have guilt feelings, you may feel shame, which has to do with your own worth as a human being. You know, I'm a failure because I can't make it in a marriage. And so all of those feelings need to be processed. They need to be recognized and honored, just like you would if someone you love had passed away. It's difficult when the person is still around, but not impossible. And I think that that does make for a transformative life in the long run.
Right. So it's death and rebirth, basically.
It is. Absolutely. It,
definitely. If anybody else wants to call in and talk to Dr. Bacon, ask questions, the number again is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. What else would you like to tell us about your book and how it can help somebody just in whatever stage of divorce or even contemplating divorce?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that I used to do was run group therapy. I worked in chemical dependency rehab and places that really rely on group therapy to assist people in changing. And one of the biggest benefits to that is how many times people would hear their story coming out of somebody else's mouth and feel kind of less alone. You know, oh, you've had that experience? Or, wow, I did too. And so I thought, when I wrote the book, I thought, how can I recreate that experience for my readers? So what I did is intersperse chapters that are about the information that I'm trying to convey about the aspects of grief or the way the limbic system works or the stages of divorce. I intersperse that with an actual full chapter of one person's story from start to finish so that you get a sense of listening to, in this case, I think it's 7 different women's experiences from the whole thing, from the time that they were married to the time that they, you know, looked back and said, huh, look at how far I've come. You know, my life has really changed in amazing ways. And so I think one of the things about the book is that it has that blend of factual information that can be useful to you, along with hearing other stories that can give you hope and give you some guidelines as to, you know, what was helpful to that person, what did they learn that they would do differently. And then at the end of each chapter, I offer some suggestions for using the information, either through journaling. I have questions that you can ask yourself and respond to, or practices of mindfulness, thinking about a scripture verse or a poem if you're not religious. So I tried to put in a lot of practical application into the book, along with things that you're learning about yourself and then the stories of other people. So hopefully gives people a lot of different ways to learn.
Yeah, that's wonderful to give them different choices. Mm-hmm. To say, you know, something rang for me in the Graceville divorce.
Right.
And that's wonderful. I mean, yeah. We all need that now. I think we all need something that, you know, to read and is going to fill us up with hope and
yes.
possibilities.
Absolutely.
And connectedness, you know, because mm-hmm. some people, they do feel very alone within the divorce process. And, you know, I mean, they could have all the support and then people get tired of hearing their stories or yes. they're grumbling about their soon to be exes. And, you know, and then mm-hmm. people start going away from them and then they become more isolated.
Yeah.
So I found this really a beautiful read.
Oh, good.
And could you let the listeners know how they can get a copy of The Graceville Divorce?
Absolutely. There's several ways. One is simply to go on Amazon and search for the Graceville Divorce, and you can get a hard copy or you can have it downloaded onto Kindle. And the other thing you can do is go onto my blog, which is thegracefilleddivorce.com, and you can order it through my blog, and I'll send you a signed copy if you would like that as well. And also on the blog, I do put postings periodically concerning divorce and other things, relationship issues, you know, whatever topic seems to be in the air at that time. So you can get some additional learning there as well. So those are 3 ways that you can order the book and start benefiting from it yourself.
That's wonderful. I really love the perspective of changing, or one of the most difficult situations a person can go through in mm-hmm. their life.
Absolutely.
And just by going through the process, being patient with it, and realizing there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that people get very afraid. You know, grief is a fearful process. C.S. Lewis, a great Christian writer, wrote about his own bereavement after his wife died, and it was particularly sad because he never thought he'd get married, and then he finally found the love of his life, and she passed away shortly thereafter from cancer. And he wrote about how close grief felt to fear. And he said, nobody ever told me that grief felt so much like fear. And I think it really does. It's such an overwhelming emotion. And one of the things that I think goes through our minds is, well, what if this never ends? You know, which makes it even worse. And so I think to hold on that, particularly at the beginning stage, it is the worst it will ever be at that point in life. It will not be that bad the rest of your life. But it is difficult. And so I really urge people, if they're unfortunately faced with this experience, to get some professional counseling and assistance. And there's all kinds of opportunities for that. I know from the Chicago School, our students are going out to all kinds of counseling centers that are often a low fee, and I always tell individuals who I refer there is that actually you're getting two counselors for the price of one because your supervisor is also assisting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's no need to go through this alone. And you're right. Your family and friends are limited. They're going through their own grief experience. You know, they may have really had, you know, good feelings for your partner, but they certainly didn't want this for you. And they're trying to figure out how to respond, and you know, it's a readjustment for everybody. And it is difficult for them to continue to be available sometimes for listening and for that kind of support. And so they're, you know, I would really look to getting some professional counseling and also finding a divorce support group. Or even if you can't find one, Codependence Anonymous is a great generic kind of support group for people. Often those kinds of issues have contributed to the end of the relationship. But some place where you can just be and people understand you and know you, and the idea is that you're there to share with each other.
Right. Learn to let go and let God. Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
And whatever form mm-hmm. that you choose to honor God. And exactly. And it's just, you know, going out and getting the support, not isolating
right.
and saying, you know what, I need somebody that's going to understand me.
Right.
I need to let go of this because it's eating me up mm-hmm. and it's eating everybody around me too.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, so yes, I agree highly, Dr. Bacon, that, mm-hmm. you know, get the support. Don't feel afraid to do it. It's going to be a process. It's mm-hmm. going to be difficult at first, but it is so worth walking through the fear mm-hmm. and letting it go. Mm-hmm. And you are transformed by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, life can open up in a whole different direction, you know, if you allow yourself to go through the difficult process of grieving. And then, you know, moving through the stages of grief and getting through to the other side. We all want to kind of skip over the early stages and just get to the other side. That would be nice, I guess, but that's
yeah.
not how it works.
No, that's not life, is it?
No, it isn't.
Okay, I want to start wrapping up for this evening. Dr. Melody Bacon, if you would like to contact her, her phone number is 949-488-8990. Again, that's 949-488-8990. Or her email address is drmbacon@coxcox.net. Again, that's drmbacon@coxcox.net. And her blog again is called The Grace Filled Divorce, and that's oneword.com, and that's thegracefilleddivorce.com, and please check out her book. It's wonderful. It reads really poetically. It's an easy read. You can pick it up anytime and make your life a little bit easier if you're going through divorce. If you know anybody else is going through divorce too, mm-hmm. be supportive, be compassionate, and realize it's a process and there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Dr. Bacon, would you like to say anything else?
No, I would just say that, you know, every grief presents an opportunity. Every crisis presents an opportunity. And I know that sometimes it's difficult to see the potentiality in that, but just hold on to that even if you can't. I think that is where, you know, you can find a transformative experience in the end of the tunnel. So I would say hold on to that regardless of where you are in the process.
Thank you again, Dr. Melody Bacon. And again, the name of the book is The Grace-Filled Divorce, Allowing God to Redeem Your Pain for the Greater Good. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
This is Julianne Good with Psych 1-on-1.